From years of anxiety to warrior and mentor, Bradley Robinson created the Anxiety Project to help you end your anxiety naturally. Let's mold the new you and let's end anxiety together.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Anxiety Project podcast here on episode 281. We're diving into a big moment in the anxiety sufferer's life. It's the waking up with the sensations, the catastrophic thoughts, the sinking feeling in their stomach. Oh God, here we go. The symptoms still there. What's going to happen to me at work? Am I going to look like a fool in front of other people now that I don't have much sleep because the night itself was rough? And so this continual momentum of anxiety and stress, well, it lingers day after day, and it affects us. It affects our digestion, and it affects our, well, overall perceptions of the world. Because if you lack sleep and your anxiety system is on 24/7, I mean, you're a slave to this thing, and we have to take control. We have to understand what this anxiety is, and also what we need to incorporate in our life. So let's talk about this. Morning anxiety, it can be a cause of one or many variables, including diet, including lack of exercise, or it could be a new job lingering in front of you. It could be neglected responsibilities, substance abuse. These all matter. As someone who suffered from severe anxiety, especially morning anxiety, I noticed within me, well, if I begin to minimize habits I know to be wrong for me, and that's my decision, I had to decide, okay, this could be causing something. Let's see what happens as an experiment if I eliminate this. So like caffeine or like, oh, things like pornography or things like sleeping in or staying up late, smoking weed, drinking wine, these things all were, it was an experiment, and let's see if they contribute in some way. And you have to be that person. If you don't like where you are in your life, or you don't like how you're feeling, then you have to take things into your own hands and treat yourself like maybe a crime scene where, you know, you're the detective and you're figuring this out. And, you know, it's really important that you have mentors and role models, people around you that implement strategies that you're not familiar with so that maybe you can incorporate them. Maybe it worked for them. Maybe they're suffering from the same thing you're suffering. And then you can take a bit of that and incorporate that into your life. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But I noticed for me that anxiety was like a spider's web. Right? It was the spider's, like all of these habits and behaviors was like a spider web leading me into kind of like a mental state. Like they're all contributing factors leading me into more a sensitivity over my health, a sensitivity over my thoughts and this introspection I would continuously engage in on a daily basis. But also I noticed with me, this is also very important, that it was the lack of responsibility that contributed to my anxiety as well. It was the lack of, well, not having a job. Well, that's a problem. It's a huge problem. Maybe getting that under control will help regulate your anxiety. And serotonin, right? That's very important. Or it could be relationships. Is the relationship working out? What are the problems? What's the spider web of the relationship? What's the spider web of your diet situation? What's the spider web of your exercise routine? Is there even an exercise routine? So there, in your home life, that's complicated. That's a spider web as well. So that being said, stress, anxiety, can become people's normal. That's the thing. If you're so accustomed to being in this chaotic way, then even breaking outside of that is going to be, well, you're going to have resistance to that because you're not used to anything else but being in a certain way or engaging in certain behaviors. You can't remember a time when you felt calm and at ease. Well, probably if you really thought about it, but it's very few moments. And there are times in an anxiety sufferer's day where their anxiety goes from a level 10 and it drops, even if it's a few notches. And I always want to talk to my clients about that. Where are those moments exactly? What are you doing in those moments? What is it exactly? You know, I don't recommend that you rely on other people to substances to drop that anxiety down, because then you're dependent on that. And there's other more productive ways that has a more profound lingering effect over your mental state than, like, say, smoking weed or alcohol or reassurance seeking or Dr. Google. There are more productive ways. And so the morning and the night is the most common time where the anxiety sufferer feels the worst. At night, there's that threat lurking over the anxiety sufferer. The threat of another restless sleep resulting in a rough day tomorrow. You might be judged by other people because you're tired and you're making mistakes or you're saying something stupid, or there's the threat of, you know, just feeling so drained emotionally and being so overly sensitive over your health and trying to get through all the chaotic challenges of the day. And this can keep someone up. It certainly kept me up various nights when I was suffering from anxiety. I remember one night where I was pacing till 2 a.m. in the morning thinking, oh my God, I got to call in sick. I can't go into work tomorrow. What if I make a mistake? There's no way I can function. There's no way I can get through a 12-hour shift. This was when I was working in the film industry, like this, like with a lack of sleep. There's no way. And, you know, you can really get going with the what if thinking, and it circles the person like vultures. That's what it's like. It's ready to take you out at your weakest point. As you move from a light sleep into a deeper sleep, the heart begins to slow and the body relaxes. And now that the brain is more open to interpretation and you can no longer use cognitive effort to repress, the brain attends to the emotional unresolved issues of your life. So go to bed in a tense and anxious state, you'll most likely wake up before falling into REM sleep. And that was the case for me. The monsters come out of the dark. And when this happens, a lot of people go to the television, or they go on their phone, they go on Dr. Google, or they have a, you know, terrible midnight snack. Not a good way to deal with this. What you need to do is you need to write a list of your concerns on paper. It's important to write out not the emotional significance of these thoughts, but just simplify what's really on your mind. It's like a simplistic statement of the what if thought. Just write out, you know, the job seems to be uncertain and I wonder if it is for me. What if I mess up on the job interview because I'm lacking sleep? What if the heart palpitation is serious? Then to each of the concerns, write, what can I do about this? And that is a loaded question, meaning you have options. If you really put time into it, you can formulate a path through that muck of uncertainty. I had to learn how to be the solver of problems rather than relying on others to solve them for me. That's key. If you can take anything away from this episode, it's that you have to learn how to become the solver of problems. Because when those people are not around, like in the middle of the night when they're asleep and the house is dark and it's just you and your own thoughts, who's going to help you at that point? The doctors is closed. The pharmacies are closed. It's just you and your own mind. And that's when you really see how people treat themselves in those dark moments. That's when the test is at its highest. What stops us from going beyond our limitations is much to do with how others perceive us. I don't want to be a fool. I don't want to be a fool. That's a big part of it. And it's also the fear of our mortalities and losing control. That's a big part of it. But it's also, a lot of it comes from in that the night anxiety I'm talking about specifically, in the morning. I mean, anxiety and the agoraphobia specifically leads to people fearing public places because they fear of losing control and making a fool out of themselves while they do that. And then I remember to turn it back into the morning after these restless sleeps of uncertainty about the day. You know, I would show up at my job as a camera trainee, and when I was working on film sets, I would show up around, 5:30, really early for these 16-hour days. And what I would do is I would show up early, beat traffic, meditate in my car, I would write in my journal, and maybe take a walk around the building. I would then go get breakfast and then start the day. So I was setting time, I was blocking out time to give back to myself. And this is really important, because if I were to just go on my phone, or if I were to sleep in as late as I could, then it would actually be more detrimental because, well, I would be rushing to work, possibly being stuck in any sort of traffic would cause me anxiety. So I just know myself. Like, what roadblocks can I avoid today? Well, I can go there early, avoid traffic. Good. And then I don't have to think about that or get worried that I'm going to show up late. When I'm in the parking lot, I can meditate and calm my body down. I can sit and relax. I can recharge batteries before I even use them up. If I'm on my phone watching YouTube videos, then yeah, I'm burning up mental energy and battery power. But if I'm just sitting with myself, then I'm relaxing my body, activating my parasympathetic nervous system, visualizing how I want the day to go, planning out a strategy for the uncertainty and the chaotic mess that I'm expecting today. Because yeah, the job was a chaotic mess, and because I was new, I was afraid of being a fool. I was a fool at it. At the first day of my job, I got yelled at by the other camera assistant. Right? Why are you pushing that cart over there? You know, you're supposed to load the cart first and then push it that way. And that was like, oh my God, is this job for me? You know, those catastrophic thoughts, especially at the time when I was just moving through this anxiety recovery. But it's humility. It's like, I don't know much. I'm going to grow. I'm going to see what I can do today. I'm going to block certain times, like on my lunch break. I'm going to go and meditate and relax my body and center myself. I'm not going to go and talk to people and, you know, engage. Like, I know my mission. I know myself. I know what I need to do. I know how to recharge my batteries. And this is going to help me during the second half of the day, because these are long days and I need to take care of myself, right? I have to put myself first. So sacred time is necessary. No distractions. No distractions, because this communicates to you that you are in territory beyond your skill set. I was. But you still decide to show up rather than avoid the situation, that you're putting on this armor, that because I'm sitting here in my car meditating, I know that I'm in a chaotic landscape. I know that things are complicated in my life. I know this job is complicated. So I'm going to sit here and give back to myself so that I can nail this job, that I can do as the best that I can. Because if I'm watching YouTube, then what does that communicate to me? oh, I'm just going to ignore my stress and, you know, my failures of the day and my mishaps and all of this. I'm going to ignore that, watch silly, maybe have a cheap little chuckle and then go back to work. It's like, yeah, I just burned up mental resources because I could have just recharged the battery rather than the battery stayed the same, but then it's still lowered because of the mental, the excess of energy that was expended by my body and mind to watch these YouTube videos. And that's not good. That's not good because when you sit with yourself, you can go process. You can process the day. You can process. So important. The master, the enlightened mind, perceives their challenges as opportunities to grow. They perceive their challenges as opportunities to grow and assimilates the new, takes in. It's like, oh yeah, I just learned something today. I'm very proud of myself about doing that today. And I recommend you do this with your daily journal, is to write three things you're pleased about doing today. That it was a bit of a challenge or maybe a big challenge, but you decided to take it on anyways. And you're reaching, like Goggins says, you're reaching in that cookie jar and you're pulling out wins that you've accomplished because we can easily forget those wins. Potential lurks in uncertainty. The Stoic, the philosopher, the enlightened mind, they look at these challenges as opportunity because within the challenge, your potential is there waiting for you and you can harness that and you can assimilate that. Upon waking up, the typical response of the anxious mind is, oh no, or ugh, oh no. That's the typical, that was mine, by the way. When I woke up, I was like, ugh. And then it's this acknowledgement, right, of the dragon of chaos that is the day. That's what it is. It's a beast that they have to contend with. Cortisol is high in the morning, so your stress is high. You're on high alert. You're waking up and you're like, ugh, how am I going to get through this? And then, like most, I would drag myself around the house. I wouldn't even make my bed. I would go into the bathroom. I would try and relax myself by, you know, throwing warm water on my face. And then I would react to my urine because I was overly sensitive to the color of my urine because I suffered deeply from health anxiety. I would crave human interaction, like family, to talk about my symptoms, to talk about my worries. Please tell me it's okay. Or please tell me it's okay to stay at home today because I want that confirmation that it is okay. Because there was it gets so interesting. Like, why would I want that? Because there's a part of me that knows that it's not okay if I stay home, that it's not okay that I avoid. It's like this unconscious reaction, right? Like my unconscious wanted me, God wanted me to go out and face the dragons and to reach and to grab onto my potential and not be a dependent person that I was. And so for me, there was no routine, no self-care, but dependent coping strategies that only weaken me as a person. That only keeps me in this bubble. Anxiety itself and all of its symptoms associated with it become the very thing I desperately wanted to avoid. It becomes the very thing I wanted to avoid. I just want to feel normal. That's the common phrase. I just want to feel normal. The obsessing is this, it's this dissection of oneself. Because I want to control what I can't control. I want to solve the problem. And we can only make sacrifices to the God of anxiety. That's the thing. We can only make sacrifices to this entity of anxiety. What does this mean? Well, I don't really have to explain that to you, do I? Like, you know what it means. What works is blocking out chunks of time to give back to yourself, because you don't understand, you don't know yourself. If you're running around anxious all day without a routine or a structure, or you're just dependent and you're a slave to all of your internal instincts and desires, but then you don't know yourself, because you're just living in a reflexive, slave-like state. And to know yourself is to know that you have actual control. And to build on this control, you have to have a routine. You have to have discipline. And to build discipline, you have to block out sections of certainty in your chaotic days. If you're like, oh my God, I'm anxious all day, things are just chaotic all the time. I'm always busy, I'm always stressed. You're not blocking out sections for yourself to calm down, to center yourself, to recharge the batteries. I recommend the morning is the best time. Blocking out, like for me, I get up at 4:30 and my routine doesn't end until 5:30. It's an hour. I'm in the bathroom most of the time, right? I'm meditating. I take a cold plunge. I write in a journal, okay? And also, I'm doing deep breathing as well. That really helps me. So you block out these times. And that's where discipline lies, is you have to just take control. You have to say, hey, I have to do breathing today. I have to go to the gym today. That's it. And that's a sacrifice. You're sacrificing sleeping in for that routine. You're sacrificing YouTube on your lunch break for meditation. You're sacrificing maybe even social interactions or seeing your friend for that self-care, the gym. So to conclude, the anxiety sufferer wakes up to a mountain of unresolved dust bunnies, right, under the bed. That's what they wake up to. Oh my God, look at all of this. Look at all of this. The symptoms, the work, the family life, the responsibility. And this leads to catastrophizing. It leads to catastrophizing. You become a slave of your mind. You're used to ruminating over catastrophic thoughts. It becomes the norm. But it doesn't have to be. You have more control over your mind than you think. I remember when I started anxiety recovery, I walked around the house. I went to my job with an elastic band on my wrist. And what I would do is whenever I was in an emotional state of like anxiety, because sometimes I couldn't even just control my thoughts. My thoughts were just like catastrophic all the time. But I would slap the band on my wrist, and then my attention would go to the feeling of the elastic band. And I would notice that, you know, it would get me out of that loop in my head, and it would get me out. And the more times I was slapping the elastic band, I noticed that the reason why I was slapping it is because I just didn't want to get, I wanted to get out of that state. And I noticed it would work. So I was slapping it at work. I was slapping it at home all the time. And it's a great tool, because you can retrain the brain to not give in to the thoughts, to not give in to the emotions, that you can let them go. And you have to give yourself permission to do that. And we don't know how, if you know, unless you give it a try. It's a leap of faith. It really is a leap of faith. You have to take the reins of your anxiety. A lot of people, I mean, when I say take the reins, I mean scheduling in those periods of the discipline. But also, you also have to learn how to let go, because you're trying to control your anxiety in moments where, you know, what can you do? You just let go. You trust in your body. Then there's no trust in the anxiety sufferer's body. You can build trust. That's why the discipline is so important. You're building trust in your body. You're building trust. That's what happens when you meditate. That's what happens when you're sitting with yourself. You start to know yourself. You start to know your limitations, and you start to push beyond that. And that garnishes self-respect. And that's where I'm going to leave you today on this podcast episode. Thank you, everyone, for being a part of this anxiety recovery community. I love you all. Rise above anxiety. I'll see you next time.
Brad's Powerful Anxiety Recovery Program is now available at unpluganxiety.com. The Anxiety Project Program is downloadable and puts the power of anxiety recovery in your own hands. Visit unpluganxiety.com.